Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And back with us now is New York City Congressman Adriano Espaillat, Democrat from Upper Manhattan and part of the Bronx. He's on the Small Business and Education and Workforce Committee, so we'll get his take on the Trump tariffs. He's on the Armed Services Committee, too. And as the former state senator from the area, he's been speaking up about local issues recently, like the mayor's Inwood rezoning proposal, which Espaillat opposes in its present form, and new ways to regulate Uber. Congressman, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And let's start with tariffs. I see you've issued a statement against them, but some progressives are for them as a way of stopping China from dumping steel and unfair trade practice, and a way of fighting the power of multinational corporations to move American jobs overseas. Why are you opposed?
Well, I believe that there's a good argument to be for it, but I am particularly against it because Puerto Rico and the recovery of Puerto Rico has been an important agenda of mine while I'm in Washington. And Puerto Rico currently benefits from the import of light steel and aluminum from countries like the Dominican Republic, and that will play a critical part in their recovery. And so for that reason, I think that there needs to be a carve-out that would allow Puerto Rico the ability to rebuild and will not saddle it with a higher price of steel or aluminum.
And people generally think of this as a Rust Belt issue. I hear what you're saying about Puerto Rico. Do you think the tariffs would also affect your district in New York City specifically in any way?
Well, there are two schools of thoughts. One of them is that it would unleash a trade war that would not benefit anybody, particularly the United States, and that will maybe position China to be in a better position regionally to outbid us basically with contracts and initiatives in other Central American, South American, Caribbean countries, as they are already doing business with them. And so there is a concern that this will lead us to a trade war that at the end of the process will not benefit the United States nor American workers. Of course, that's one way. The other one is what's being pushed by the White House, which is that, you know, we need to be tough on the rest of the world to ensure that American jobs are protected. So, but my opposition to it is basically with regards to Puerto Rico and the ability for Puerto Rico to rebuild itself, and that is very much connected to how it receives currently its steel and light steel and aluminum, which will be impacted by this tariff.
You're on the Armed Services Committee. Do you have a reaction to the president's new plan to meet with Kim Jong-un?
No, I'm in the Foreign Affairs Committee.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
So well, even more relevant.
Well, look, it seems to me that this was a high theater at its very best, right? This was a Broadway theater where they called each other names and who had the biggest button. And now all of a sudden they want to patch things up and meet and sort of like divert traffic to this meeting and public opinion. And, you know, I'm all for diplomacy, but if this is a distraction so that we don't do gun control, if this is a distraction so that we don't get things done, get the important things done that America is waiting for, Dreamers and immigration reform, then, you know, we must be cognizant that it is what it is, and this is theater, right? And everybody will be focusing in on that particular handshake or meeting and forget the fact that we just had a massacre. Not a killing. People get killed in a traffic accident. The murdering of young people in a school in Parkland. That 800,000 Dreamers are still out there without a resolution to their issue. And their parents are still out there without a resolution to their issue. And public opinion may be sidetracked with this meeting with North Korea.
And a distraction from the Russia investigation.
Absolutely, no question about that. Daniels. Mueller continues to move forward, yes.
And Stormy Daniels. But wouldn't an anti-war Democrat like yourself want to say, go ahead and take this shot? It's possible Kim Jong-un is toying with us like he has with past administrations. But better to find out than to keep digging in with my button is bigger than your button and risk having a war.
I'm all for our diplomacy. I'm all for avoiding war. I am against the military-industrial complex. I am for peace and diplomacy. But I'm also for the DREAM Act. I'm also for getting rid of the assault weapons. I'm also for gun control.
How about the DREAM Act? Some people listening now may not know that you are the first member of Congress who is once an undocumented immigrant. Now, of course, you're an American citizen, but this is one of your issues, and you have this unique personal connection to it. The deadline, supposedly, for the expiration of DACA was this past Monday, March 5th,
correct,
but the Supreme Court has effectively extended it for we don't know how long. How stuck is Congress, and how can they get all, how can your Republican colleagues get unstuck?
Well, I continue to speak about the Dreamers and the DREAM Act. In fact, recently, myself in the House and Senator Menendez in the Senate got ranked as the top two Democrats that continue to speak about the Dreamers, although we're still very much committed to gun control, as we were committed to disaster relief. But we will not get sidetracked from speaking about it because we have another crisis, like the gun control crisis, before us. And so the Dreamers are, in effect, protected because the courts have stepped in. But this is not an ultimate solution. They're very fragile. Another court decision could come at any time that reverses that, and they will be completely out in the cold. And remember, these are young people, 800,000 of them, who share their personal information with government. And they told us where they live, and most of them live with their parents, who are also undocumented. So as Trump begins to prepare his deportation machine, they have the information, the data, and the personal information of these Dreamers as to who they are, where they live, who they live with. And they could very well go and knock on those doors in the middle of the night and begin their deportation. So we must protect them. And there's several pieces of legislation, bipartisan legislation, that's on the table right now, and the president has refused to take them up. The first one is the Clean Dream Act, presented by a Republican congresswoman from Florida and a Democratic congresswoman from California that has close to 200 co-sponsors, including myself. You have the Heard Aguilar bill, which has also a resolution to the Dreamers and some level of border protection in it. And then you have the framework of the Senate that was sent over by three Democrats and three Republican senators, which also has a resolution to the Dreamers and their parents to some degree, as well as some border protection provisions, none of which have been taken up by the president because he wants to hold these Dreamers hostage, and he wants ransom for them. And so we must do this quickly. We must bring protection. I am confident that we will bring some protection, level of protection to them. Right now, they're protected because of the court action, but that's not permanent.
My guest is Congressman Adriano Espaillat from Upper Manhattan and part of the Bronx, and we can take phone calls for him. First priority to anybody in the district, but anyone may call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. On national issues or some of the local ones we'll get into now. And I've been a little surprised to see you weighing in on local issues recently. Usually members of Congress, once they go to Washington, stick mostly to national issues as they affect your district. Why are you speaking out about the mayor's plan for more housing, rezoning for more housing in Upper Manhattan?
That's a good question, Brian. And I tell you why I'm weighing in. We all know what Robert Moses stood for. And we know how when he constructed the Cross Bronx Expressway, that defined the future of the Bronx. In fact, it divided it in half, the South Bronx and the North Bronx. And, of course, the South Bronx became endemic and synonymous with poverty, drugs, crime for a long time. And one of the poorest area, if not the poorest area, in the entire United States. And this happened because there was a traumatic displacement of 5,000 families when the Cross Bronx was constructed. This plan, the rezoning of Inwood, proposes to impact 6,299 preferential rent apartments that have no protection and that will be flipped in a year or two if this rezoning occurs. So a total of 6,000.
And for people who don't know the term, preferential rent, and correct me if I'm wrong, is rent-stabilized housing where the rent that the landlord charges is actually less than the allowable rent under the rent stabilization law, but that's apparently what the market can bear. And if housing becomes more valuable in the neighborhood, then they'll pop it right up to that legal limit, affecting a lot of families. Is that it?
That's correct, except that those tenants have no protections whatsoever with regards to rent stabilization once their lease is up. So in other words, if they pay an $1,800 rent, but the market value price of that apartment is $2,500, once their lease is up, that landlord could now go to the market and get that tenant that will pay $2,500.
Oh, fact, all the way to market. The current lease, because people just get 1 year or 2 year leases usually.
That's
in
correct.
Rent stabilization. So after a year or two, those people could be out or forced up to market rates entirely, not just to the rent stabilization maximum?
That's correct. Now, let me just say to you that many of those tenants are not getting their leases renewed. So the speculation has already begun. And this will be a traumatic change, Brian. Over 6,000 units at zip code 134 and zip code 140, there are 6,299 preferential rent leases. And I think that will impact the neighborhood, the Washington Heights Inwood community, in unforeseen ways. And that's why I'm against it. I'm asking the mayor for 5,000 units of affordable housing, including 1,000 units for senior citizens.
And I see you've called for new development in Inwood, which is basically above 200th Street. I guess a little of this might be below 200th or Dyckman Street, but around there up to the top of Manhattan, to be 100% affordable housing. And I put that proposal to the mayor on this program 2 weeks ago, and here's part of what he said.
If you say 100% affordable, you are saying all taxpayer-funded. Let's be honest about this. The money has to come from somewhere, and it has to be there for decades to come. If you don't want an affordable building created that's going to be affordable for a year, you want it for decades. Someone has to subsidize that. That would be the taxpayers. We don't have the money to do 100% affordable everywhere.
What's your reaction to that, Congressman?
I respectfully disagree. First of all, the library project, which he proposes now, is 100% affordable. I'm asking for private, non-for-profit, and city development, not exclusively the city of New York. There's several private developers that are proposing close to 1,000 units of affordable housing at the same levels, or maybe just a slightly higher than what the mayor proposes in the library project. So I am saying we have identified many sites that are both private, non-for-profit owned, and public, city and state owned projects, such as the Edgecombe Correctional Facility. And I'm talking about Washington Heights Inwood Community Board 12, because I believe that's one neighborhood. A neighborhood that saw the exodus of 14,000 people in the 2010 census, second only to Buffalo, New York. We were pushed out because rent was high and because we have the highest concentration of rent-stabilized, privately-owned apartments in the entire state of New York. And so we need protection. We've only seen a slightly over 500 apartments built in the last 40 years, rent-stabilized units. And so we are asking the mayor, if he proposes to build 300,000 units of affordable housing, we want 5,000. We want our fair share. And we're not saying that the city should be saddled with the entire responsibility. We're saying private, non-for-profit, and city responsibility. And I think that we can do that. If he does that, then we can sit down and talk about his plan. Otherwise, I think inclusionary zoning will be nothing less than what Robert Moses did to the Bronx when he built the Cross Bronx Expressway.
Here's a call from the neighborhood. Gene in Inwood, you're on WNYC with Congressman Espaillat. Hi, Gene.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, Gene.
Hello there, Mr. Espaillat. Thank you for taking my call. I've been an Inwood resident for nearly 37 years, and I've seen a lot of changes. I'd like to know what specifics you have in mind to protect existing rent-stabilized tenants you were just talking about, of which I am one, by the way. I'm also a senior.
So what can you do as a member of Congress to influence this, Congressman?
Well, that, Gene, that's a great question. I am concerned. Let me just say first, for starters, that I've asked for the rezoning area to be inclusive only of the area east of 10th Avenue, not to include 207th Street and Dykeman Street, those two very important commercial corridors, so that it won't be a runaway train, and it will be confined to a very specific area. I think that the city needs to put in more resources to have legal services to ensure that those folks with preferential rent leases are also looked out for, that the state, of course, takes up rent stabilization next year. I will be there to fight for that, as I did while I was in the state legislature, to ensure the protections are strengthened, that vacancy decontrol is done away with, that preferential rent leases are eliminated, and you don't have this second tier of sort of like rent stabilization. So this is a very broad debate. But I'm saying to you as a senior, I want at least 1,000 of the 5,000 units that I'm asking from the mayor to be exclusively for seniors. And I think are having a rough time making ends meet. Very often they even have to rent a room to a boarder and so to make ends meet. And I think it is a crisis that will be unleashed if these units are not put forward before the rezoning occurs.
Do you have the mayor's ear?
Well, I will be speaking to the mayor today in Baltimore, and I hope to speak to his folks on Monday. And, of course, we have this very big forum on Monday evening at the Washington Heights Academy on 204th Street in Sherman Avenue. So we invite the entire community, particularly the East of Broadway community, which for some reason has not been engaged as I think they should be. And that particular part of the community will be more adversely affected because those are where, you know, the two zip codes are at 134, 140 that has those preferential rent leases.
Jacob in Harlem has a professional preferential rent call. Hi, Jacob. You're on WNYC. Jacob, you there? Jacob in Harlem once. Jacob in Harlem twice. Well, he's one of a few people who've called in to say that they think preferential rent really does only allow the landlord to bump it up to the rent-stabilized maximum, not to full market rate. Are you sure it's one and not the other?
Yes, that's correct. But, you know, even that, you know, it's very high. The current market, it's a one that doesn't yield that kind of tenant. And, of course, those tenants will not be able to afford that kind of hike in rent. So, you know, I'm concerned about that. I am concerned that the preferential rent least will be one that will be flipped. We'll also see an aggressive effort by landlords to buy out tenants who are living in those apartments, not just in the preferential rent leases, but also in rent-stabilized apartments. We've seen that already, how landlords are offering $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, even as high as $50,000 for an apartment, so people will leave. And we've seen people take the money and leave, unfortunately. And so that will transform a neighborhood, just like the Bronx was transformed when Robert Moses built the Cross Bronx Expressway.
Mark in Queens, you're on WNYC with Congressman Adriano Espaillat. Hi, Mark. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. So I was at the meeting of Broadway Democrats last night at Bank Street's auditorium. And you stated, Congressmember, that you're not going to support state Senate candidates who are part of the IDC. Does that mean that you are not endorsing Marisol Alcantara, who was elected to succeed you with your support?
I said what I said, and I said that I would not be endorsing anybody either locally or nationally that doesn't conference with the majority Democratic conference.
And so considering your support for State Senator Alcantara, and as some people know, I'm from your district, and I know these politics fairly well as local politics. So you endorsed her. You've defended her for some of the time that she's been in office, even though she does caucus with the IDC in the State Senate, which helps keep the Republicans in power in the State Senate. So you're now breaking with Marisol Alcantara, unless she decides to caucus with the Democrats. That's what you're saying, right?
Well, Brian, I have been a strong advocate while I was in the Senate, and those of my colleagues that were part of my conference, the Democratic Conference, know that I was a strong advocate to push for those folks that were not in our conference that call themselves Democrats to come back, because I know the importance of having a majority in passing legislation like strengthening rent stabilization. That did not happen, unfortunately. I was hopeful that this year I could convince, and there will be other folks convincing them to come back again and form a new majority. That did not happen, and now I'm saying I am not supporting anybody locally or nationally. In the post-Trump era, there's no wiggle room. I'm not supporting anybody that doesn't conference with a majority Democratic conference.
So with your relationship professionally with Senator Alcantara, has she told you that she will now conference with the majority Democrats?
I have not heard that from her or any other member.
All right. Couple of things before you go. I see that you're also proposing something on another local issue, which is a reorganization of the Taxi and Limousine Commission to more effectively regulate, the increasing number of app-based services like Uber, Lyft, and Via, and all the cars they have on the road. What are you proposing?
Well, Brian, let me just say that unfortunately, three drivers in the last couple of months have committed suicide, including one that drove, unfortunately, his car right up to City Hall and shot himself dead. And this is happening because the livery industry, the green card industry, and the yellow car industry are facing great stresses, right? The Taxi Limousine Commission has been probably one of the worst city agencies ever. In fact, several mayors, going back to as far as Mayor Koch, have proposed to either eliminate that commission or to merge it with another city agency because of the horrible way they ran business. Now, all of a sudden, in addition to regulating yellow cars, green cars, and liveries, which is traditionally what this commission did, now you have the influx of 40,000 or more new vehicles that are Uber, Lyft, and the app industry has finally come into the this transportation industry, the city of New York, and they're just unable to regulate this booming industry. They're flooding the market, with what are they going to balloon to, 200,000 cars every day? So we need a new agency that's state-of-the-art that will be able to regulate and supervise the industry that will ensure that the market will not balloon to 200,000 right. vehicles, that will have an independent enforcement unit, perhaps aligned with the New York City Police Department, where they will be trained, sensitivity training, so they don't have this very rough relationship with drivers and their customers. We want a separate court, so it's not a kangaroo court. When you get a summons, you're automatically guilty without even being able to present evidence that you're innocent. And we want a better agency, not what you have right now, which is very archaic and not really equipped to handle the new dynamics of the industry.
I understand the due process concern. On the concern about what kind of cars are on the road, how much is it the place of government to protect the traditional taxi industry from competition? Maybe it's like trying to ban news on the internet so print newspapers can continue to thrive. If new technology is offering riders a more convenient and competitively priced alternative, why should the city protect the old companies that can't change with the times?
Well, I don't know if we're getting more competitive prices. Sometimes I take Uber, and they're a lot higher than my local livery cab, first-class car service. I don't know if you take that, Brian, but that's the one that I usually call. And they provide me a really good, affordable flat rate. I know the driver. I have a personal relationship with the base, and if I have a problem with one of the drivers, I'll call the base, and they'll speak to him or her.
I've used them, but it depends. It depends on the situation. In many cases, Uber is cheaper than the local cars.
Well, let me say, I'm not a fan of the yellow cab industry because for a long time they discriminated against my neighborhood, and they wouldn't take passengers like me going uptown. But the fact of the matter is that also they've been under a lot of stress financially, and what used to be worth a medallion over $1 million now is being sold for $150,000. So they're in bankruptcy, right?
Yes.
And this
yep.
has happened because there's been a dramatic influx of app-related new transportation modalities to the industry. All I'm saying to you is that this is a new market, a new industry, and it needs to be looked at, not just for Uber and Lyft, but the green car, for example. What has happened with the green car, which has not been successful like we expected it? What's happening with livery drivers? You know, these are men and women that support their families. They're, for the most part, working-class people, and they're being subjected to what I call selective enforcement and if not entrapment practices. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody with crutches going down the sidewalk, stop a livery cab. They want to go somewhere. They make believe they want to go to a hospital. They get in. They almost force themselves inside the car, and all of a sudden the driver finds out this is a TLC inspector. There's a finding them. $1,500 to begin, and a fine that could go as high as $10,000.
Entrapment.
That's correct.
We're out of time, except that I'm curious, since you're speaking out on mayoral issues, I've started to wonder if you see Congress as your long-term future, or if you're opening the door to running for mayor in 2021.
Please.
Are you considering that?
I like where I am. I plan to stay there a long time. Let the games begin for other people, but not for me.
Then we leave it there with Congressman Adriano Espaillat from Upper Manhattan and part of the Bronx. And keep coming on with us, okay?
Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you very much.